comfortable. I think we are ready to start the sessions this afternoon. I am Frederick Sawe. I work with the Kenya Medical Research Institute and the Walter Ritter Program. My co-chair will introduce himself. This is the PMTCT session, TVAX 1. We have five speakers, and each presentation will run for about 10 minutes, and there will be questions at the end of each presentation for about 5 minutes. I would like to request the speakers to keep it very short and precise so that we can have enough time. And any lengthy questions or comments can follow up at the end of the presentation. I'm going to hand over to my co-chair, and he will introduce the first speakers.
Thank you, Fred. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. The first three papers are really important from the point of view of trying to prevent or reduce breastfeeding transmission of HIV. And the first paper, my name is Jerry Kovadio, sorry. The first paper is by Charles Kilewo. He's from Tanzania, and he's from the Muhimbili College of Health Sciences. I've worked with Charles for a long time. He was one of the principal investigators of the Petra trial, which was one of the largest PMTCT trials ever done. So, and Charles is going to speak about the prevention of MTCT through breastfeeding by treating mothers prophylactically with triple ARV in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, and it's a continuation of that Petra trial, and it's called Petra Plus. Mitra Plus, sorry. Charles.
Thanks very much, Professor Kovadia, for the introduction. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to thank the conference organizers for giving us the opportunity to present the Mitra Plus 6 months results of follow-up, which is entitled Prevention of Mother-Child Transmission of HIV Through Breastfeeding by Treating Mothers with Triple Antiretroviral Therapy in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. As you said, my name is Charles Kleo. I'm present on behalf of my colleagues whose names are on this slide. But I would like to recognize two colleagues who are part of this team who are here in this room, Fred Mhalu and Augustine Masawe. The participating institutions are Muhimbili University College of Health Sciences, Muhimbili National Hospital, and the Swedish Institute for Infectious Disease Control in Sweden. The majority of HIV-infected mothers in developing countries, including Tanzania, have to breastfeed their infants as they have no safe, acceptable, or feasible alternative infant feeding options. The question is, how can we protect or make this happen safely without increasing the risk of transmission of HIV? We have previously conducted a study in Dar es Salaam called Mitra to investigate the possibility to reduce MTCT of HIV-1 during breastfeeding by prophylactic ARV treatment of infants of HIV-infected mothers during breastfeeding, during the breastfeeding period. The MTCT rate at 6 months was 4.9%, 95% confidence interval of 2.7 to 7.1. The objectives of the Mitra Plus study was to investigate the possibility to prevent MTCT of HIV-1 by triple combination ARV treatment of mothers during late pregnancy and 6 months of breastfeeding. The second objective was to improve mothers' health by continuing ARV treatment for mothers with advanced HIV disease. This was an open-label, 9 randomized prospective PMC study in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. Enrollment was at 34 weeks of gestation, or earlier in women with at clinical WHO stage 3 or 4, or CD4 cell count less than 200 cells per microliter. Women were counseled to practice exclusive breastfeeding for 6 months. Treatment of mothers. Women were treated with zidovudine, 3TC, and nevirapine during late pregnancy, during delivery, and 6 months after delivery, and continued treatment for women with WHO stage 3 and 4 with cell counts less than 200 cells per microliter. For women with CD4 cell count more than 250, nevirapine was replaced by enfinavir, following a new recommendation due to side effects. And 62 women were put on this kind of regimen. Infants were treated with zidovudine and 3TC from birth to 1 week. HIV in mothers, women were screened by using capillary rapid tests, capillary and determine, confirmed by ELISA. And HIV diagnosis in children was done using by qualitative PCR assays. Now, the results from 2004 to June 2006, 14,255 women were counseled on HIV testing, and 95.7% agreed to test or tested, and the prevalence was 11.2%. 33.2% of the 1,508 positive women were enrolled in the study, and the rest were referred to the National PMCT program. Now, I would like to present the results, 6 months follow-up results of 440 mother-child pairs who had complete data. The analysis was done using SPSS version 14, and the transmission was analyzed using Kaplan-Meier techniques, considering the number of children exposed to the breastfeeding at different time points. The characteristics of the women on enrollment, the median age was 26 years, 71% were married, 86% had primary school level of education, 93.9% were stage 1 WHO, and 1.6% were stage 3 and 4 WHO disease stage. The hemoglobin median was 10 grams per deciliter. The CD4 count median was 416 cells per microliter. 16.4% were had less than 200 cells per microliter. The viral load median was 14,621 copies per milliliter. 17% of the mothers were delivered by C-section through on obstetric indication mainly. Mitra, the breastfeeding, at 6 weeks, 98% of the children are breastfeeding. At 3 months, 92% were breastfeeding. At 5 months, 77% were breastfeeding. In the 6 months, 18% were still breastfeeding. The median duration of breastfeeding was 24 weeks. Exclusive breastfeeding and short weaning periods was reported by most women. The cumulative transmission Kaplan-Meier analysis showed that at 6 weeks, 4.1% had HIV positive, 95% confidence interval 2.1 to 6, and at 6 months, 5% had transmitted, 95% confidence interval 3.2 to 7. This graph also showed the number of children who were exposed to breastfeeding at different time points. We also did the logistic regression analysis to see factors associated with transmission. And in the univariate analysis, length of treatment and viral load demonstrated an increased, was associated with transmission. But in multivariate analysis, only viral load was significantly associated with transmission. We also looked into the adverse safety or adverse reactions. And skin rash was mostly the one which was prominent. 5.5% of the women developed rash associated with nevirapine, and 1.4% showed severe or level 3 or 4 Stevens-Johnson syndrome. And most of this rash was came about when the nevirapine dose was stepped up to 400 milligrams per day. None of this was associated with any maternal death. For liver toxicity, there was no grade 3 or 4 toxicity, only grade 1 and grade 2 for alanine transaminase and aspartate transaminase, which were demonstrated. 4.2% for alanine, grade 1, and grade 2, 0.7. For aspartate, was 10% and 3%. We compare point estimate between Mitra Plus, Mitra, and the Petra trial. We see at 6 weeks, the transmission Mitra Plus was 4.1%, and in Mitra was 3.8%, and in Petra was 5.4%. Testing for significant difference, there was no significant difference at 6 weeks. But at 6 months, in Mitra Plus was 5%, Mitra was 4.9%. And these two, there's no difference, but when compared with historical data from Petra, there was a significant difference. In conclusion, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to say that these results of the Mitra Plus study show a low MTST transmission rate at 6 weeks and at 6 months in mothers given triple ARV therapy, peripartum and during breastfeeding. The results are similar to those in the Mitra study where children instead of mothers were treated during breastfeeding. The strategy used in the Mitra Plus study is the advantage that mothers with advanced stage of disease will benefit from the treatment for their own benefit, for their own health. I would like to acknowledge the financial support from the Swedish International Development Agency, SAREC, Swedish Embassy in Tanzania, and my colleagues who worked with us in this study, but above all, the women who participated in the study. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Charles. We have time for one or two questions. I can't see too clearly, but are there any questions from anyone in the audience? Francois?
Also, that is from France. Thanks very much, Dr. Kileo. It's very interesting trial or study. Could you tell us if you have looked at survival of children and the composite indicators such as HIV-free survival, which is more commonly used than simply transmission rate?
Survival of children in terms of...
As a possible outcome, what we call HIV-free survival?
Yeah, as I showed here, between 6 weeks and 6 months, 4 children seroconverted. This is the data which we have until now for the follow-up of 6 months. We had those with birth, stillbirths. There were about 15 children who died, but these mostly were stillbirths. And early neonatal death. Yeah.
Dr. Gilbert from Jamaica. Were you able to document mixed feeding, which may have influenced your transmission rates in the end? I noticed you had, you know, exclusively breastfeeding for various periods, but were you able to find any of the mummies who were mixed feeding, breastfeeding, and formula feeding?
Yeah, most of the reporting on exclusive breastfeeding was self-reporting by the mothers. But when we followed individual data from the four children who self-converted, and we found that most of the mothers were mixed feeding, and they didn't really adhere to the treatment which was given.
Okay, so that could have affected your transmission rate because of the mixed feeding issues. I mean, increases the risk of maybe getting HIV.
I'm not getting well.
No, I'm just saying mixed feeding is known to increase the transmission rate to the baby. So that would influence your outcome of transmission. I just wanted to know if you had documented the maternal viral load that it had fallen post-ARV during the study. It had fallen to significantly low levels to reduce the risk of transmission to babies.
Well, we have not analyzed to see whether exclusive or mixed feeding, how it influenced the transmission.
Okay.
But I think from the data which we know from other, from the literature, definitely mixed feeding will always increase the transmission. So we didn't analyze this one.
If you don't mind being very brief.
Thank you very much. I'm Dr. Slavut from Thailand. Thank you for your presentation. From your study, I heard you change the nevirapine to the nevirapine if the CD4 more than 250, right? And from your study, you can share about the low incidence of the hepatitis found in the when you use the nevirapine. Why did you change the nevirapine to the nevirapine?
Well, we changed nevirapine to nevirapine because the data came out that for patients with CD4 counts more than 250, we are more at risk of developing side effects when you use nevirapine. This was a recommendation of the WHO, so we thought we should change that. But now, though we changed to nevirapine, now nevirapine are being withdrawn also because they've been found there are problems with it. So these are the developments of science.
Okay.
Yeah.
One question, one quick comment. My name's Lynn Moffinson from NIH. Just a comment that this was a remarkably healthy group of women. 94% were asymptomatic, and the median CD4 count was over 400. Is it really legitimate to compare this group and their transmission to Petra? What was the median CD4 in Petra and the symptom status in Petra? I think the women were sicker in the Petra group, so I'm not sure that the comparison that you're making in your last slide is really accurate.
Not well. Lynn says that the comparison between Petra and your study may not be justified because Petra was sick.
Well, but if you look in Petra, we took the best arm of the Petra, not the whole Petra group, and the arm A, which was used the best treatment than arm B or the placebo group. And if you look into some of the data from the Mitra, their patient is not presented here. They look more sicker than the Petra data, which I've not shown here.
I'm sorry, I'll have to stop the question. We may have time at the end, so I'll come back to you. Thanks very much, Charles. But I just must remind the audience that in terms of the transmission due to breastfeeding, it was only 1.1% if you took the distance between 4 weeks and 6 months. And that's how most people would compare it. So it's quite a low, very low transmission. Thanks very much, Charles. The next speaker is Victor Arendt, and he's speaking on a similar subject. And it's a study from Rwanda. It's called AMATA, and it's the effectiveness of ARV therapy in breastfeeding mothers to prevent postnatal vertical transmission.
afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I want to thank the organizers for giving me the opportunity to present the data of the AMATA study at this conference. This is an interim analysis on the effectiveness of antiretroviral therapy in breastfeeding mothers to prevent postnatal mother-to-child transmission. AMATA stands for Allaitement Maternel sous Trithérapie Antiretrovirale, and it also means milk in Kinyarwanda. The study is conducted at two health centres in Kigali, one academic university hospital maternity and one district hospital, all in Rwanda. It's conducted by the ESLEP program together with the Treatment and Research on AIDS Center Kigali, the National Reference Lab, and the Centre Hospitalier Universitaire de Kigali. As we know, postnatal transmission through breastfeeding can occur in up to 15% of children born to HIV-infected mothers in limited resource countries. The aim of this study is to compare breastfeeding under antiretroviral therapy with formula feeding for the prevention of postnatal transmission. For this, we analyzed transmission rates, and we also had a look at morbidity, mortality, and child development under both feeding modes. All HIV-positive women attending one of the four antenatal clinics are proposed to participate in the study after informed consent. All receive an NRTI-based ARV treatment after the end of the second trimester of pregnancy. Regarding the feeding mode, women had to choose before delivery between breastfeeding for 6 months under treatment or formula feeding. Breastfeeding mothers discontinue ARV 1 month after weaning unless they needed it for their own health. Now to the choice of the treatments. Those women with CD4 below 350 or in WHO clinical stage 4 received antiretrovirals as per the national protocol in Rwanda, which is usually a triimmune, a fixed drug combination of D4T, 3TC, and nevirapine. They also opted between formula feeding and breastfeedings. Those mothers not eligible for ARV under the national program usually received AZT, 3TC, efavirenz-based regimen from after week 26 of pregnancy, and they stopped this treatment either at birth in case they had opted for formula feeding or at 7 months in case they had opted for breastfeeding. Dual NRTI treatment was continued for seven days after heart, and all babies received single-dose nevirapine plus AZT for 7 days. Now for the results. 573 women have been enrolled and enrollment is closed. So far, 557 have delivered. Among these, 57 opted for formula feeding, while 57% opted for formula feeding, while 43% preferred breastfeeding under triple therapy. Diagnostic PCR results done by Roche DNA assay are now available for 87% of the children having reached the age of 7 months. Maternal viral loads at delivery are as follows. 52% are undetectable, 38% lie between 40 and 1,000 copies, and 10% only are above 1,000 copies at delivery. Now, in terms of vertical transmission, so far, 7 children out of 431 with available PCR results have become infected. That is 1.6%. 6 of these were infected at birth, and so far only one became infected through breastfeeding. That child was PCR negative at month 3 and became PCR positive at month 7. So that's a transmission rate of 0.6% with a confidence interval between 0 and 3 per 100. The viral load in the in that mother was undetectable at delivery, and it was at 3.6 log at the moment of weaning, and we would suspect that the woman had interrupted antiretroviral treatment. Now, in terms of morbidity, there was no statistically significant difference in the number of medical visits among the formula-fed and breastfed children. There was also no difference on the average of disease episodes among the two groups, and we observed 6% breastfeeding and 10% formula feeding, 6% hospital admissions and 10% hospital admissions in the breastfeeding compared to the formula feeding. So there might be a trend here in favor of less hospitalizations in breastfeeding. In terms of mortality, 4% of the children died, 3% in the breastfeeding group and 6% in the formula feeding group. And this is not significant. Also, again, there might be a trend. In terms of psychomotor development, we did not see any difference in the number of days that it took children to be able to follow movements with their eyes or holding their heads or be able to sit alone, so no difference in terms of cognitive development. Now, in terms of growth and weight, you see that the curves for growth are absolutely superposable between formula feeding and breastfeeding, and also for weight gain. The breastfed children put on weight slightly faster in the beginning, and they have a drop at rapid weaning after 6 months, but they make it up by month nine, so no difference in terms of growth and weight. As a conclusion, our results show that it is possible to obtain low overall transmission rates using triple antiretroviral therapy during the last trimester of pregnancy and during breastfeeding. Breastfeeding under triple therapy in children born to HIV-infected women is associated with a very low transmission rate while keeping the benefit of breastfeeding. And we did not see a significant difference in terms of morbidity or mortality in children under formula feeding compared to breastfeeding in this study. I presented this data on behalf of the MATA study team. I would like to particularly mention Alexandra Pelletier, Anastasie Mukawamasinga, Christine Omes, Julian Daisaba, Joseph Fianca from the Muima Maternity, Patrick Chiaga, Nathan Macombe from the National Reference Lab, Anita Asimbwe from TRAC, Olivier Courteil, and Virginie Lenoir. Thank you.
Thank you, Vic. That's a very nice paper. Any questions?
From Germany. Why did you choose a CD4 cell cutoff of 350 for nevirapine? I think the FDA recommends 250. And could you comment on the side effects in the surgery to women?
The number of 350, that's the national program in Rwanda. It's people below 350 or at the clinical stage 4. Are put under retroviral treatment as per the national program. For the side effects, I'm sorry, this is an interim analysis, and all I can say is I think there are three cases of treatment changes due to side effects to nevirapine, and two or three because of anemia to AZT, but we have not done any more precise analysis as to grade one or two or three.
Thank you. I was just a little confused because there are national differences in the cutoffs. Sorry.
The lady at the back.
Tamara Cutting from the Bernard Institute in Melbourne. You mentioned in the one case where there was transmission to the baby, where the baby became infected, that a possible reason was that there was interruption of treatment. The woman may not have taken her ARVs. Have you considered the possibility that she may have become newly reinfected during the time when she was breastfeeding. Has your study looked at interviewing mothers about their sexual behaviors during the time of breastfeeding? Because as we know, when a woman becomes newly infected or newly reinfected, the chances of transmission to the baby are highest.
Well, one issue was undetectable at birth, and I assume she would not have become reinfected under triple therapy if she had taken it properly. And then the other thing is this woman became sick and had needed hospitalization, and probably at that moment the treatment was discontinued.
I am Dr. Vijay Bhaskar from India. Have you looked at, or are you planning to look at, the comparison of costs between the formula feeding and the cost of ARV drug therapy, along with the opportunity cost, to see which is more cost effective at the public health level?
You mean the cost between formula feeding and triple therapy? You mean?
Yeah, I mean, is one more economical than the other? Because this may have implications for public health policy as to what we would recommend.
Not done the detailed cost analysis, but 6 months of Triumvirate are roughly the same order of magnitude in terms of cost as 6 months of formula feeding if you purchase the formula feeding in bulk. But if women have to buy it themselves at the store, then formula feeding will be much more expensive.
So, Vic, what was the transmission rate in the women with the very low CD4 counts who you put on the other heart regimen? Do you have that?
We have not yet done the transmission, done the comparison of transmission rate according to CD4 counts or variants.
Is there somebody there?
Daniel O'Brien, Mental Health Frontier. I was just wondering, have you looked at, or are you planning to look at any evidence for viral resistance in the mothers who stop at 7 months, even with your 1 week of double nucleoside after they stop?
We are not yet there, but we plan to do it, definitely.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Arendt. Dr. Arendt is from the Central Hospital in Luxembourg. The next speaker is Louise Kuhn, who's from Columbia University in New York, and she's done a study called ZEBS in Zambia, which looks at exclusive breastfeeding and other types of breastfeeding. And she's going to give you the results now.
Thank you. I'm going to be presenting on behalf of the Zambia Exclusive Breastfeeding Study that we refer to as ZEBS, and I'm going to be presenting our data on the high uptake of exclusive breastfeeding and reduced risks of postnatal HIV transmission that occur in association with exclusive breastfeeding. ZEBS was actually designed as a randomized clinical trial of early weaning at 4 months, and our results, which have shown no benefit of early weaning on HIV-free survival, have already been presented. But nested within this clinical trial was a prospective observational study to investigate the feasibility and effectiveness of exclusive breastfeeding as a means to reduce postnatal HIV transmission. In planning the study, we ruled out an experimental design as unethical and impractical. This is because while the benefits of exclusive breastfeeding were in question at the time that we designed the study, the benefits of this practice for other aspects of maternal and child health were already well established. This therefore ruled out having a group that we could ethically randomize to mixed feeding. We could also not ethically randomize anyone to formula feeding because it is unsafe in the communities where we were working. As part of the clinical trial, we recruited 958 HIV-infected pregnant women at two clinics in Lusaka, Zambia. We then followed these women and their infants until the child was 24 months of age. We took regular blood samples that we tested for HIV by PCR, to determine the HIV transmission rates. All women in the study were encouraged to breastfeed exclusively to 4 months, but we also collected detailed information about breastfeeding practices with the a priori objective of analyzing the risks of transmission between those mothers who followed our advice to breastfeed exclusively and to compare them to those women who did not follow our advice. The main component of our intervention was one-to-one counseling. Counseling began during the antenatal period, and we tried to recruit women so that there was opportunity to have at least 2 counseling sessions before delivery. Postnatal counseling occurred both at the clinic and at home. Counseling was scheduled at 4 days post-delivery, at 1 week post-delivery, weekly to 1 month, and then every 2 weeks to 6 months. Home visits were interspersed between the clinic visits so that we could maintain this level of contact. All nurse midwives were instructed on how to appropriately support the initiation of breastfeeding immediately after delivery. Messages about the many benefits of exclusive breastfeeding were part of the community outreach and education that was done as part of the study. Study participants also organized themselves into self-help support groups, which they called mother support groups, that engaged in a variety of income-generating projects and health education projects. And the benefits of exclusive breastfeeding was an important unifying and motivating theme within these groups. Now, the message about the benefits of exclusive breastfeeding was not new. And both of the clinics in Lusaka had baby-friendly policies in place before the study took place. And this is the outside wall of one of the clinics where we worked in Lusaka. We trained our study staff in counseling using a shortened version of the WHO breastfeeding counseling course, but most of them had received some training in lactation management before the study started. Uptake of exclusive breastfeeding was very high in our study population. We defined non-exclusive breastfeeding as giving the child any non-breast milk item. This includes water, non-human milk, non-milk liquids, and semi-solids, everything except prescribed medicines. And we gave all children cotrimoxazole from 6 weeks of age. We considered non-exclusive breastfeeding to have occurred if any of these items were given in the past 24 hours, if they were reported to have been given at any time since the last clinic visit at least once per week. If we view the data cross-sectionally, more than 90% of women reported only exclusive breastfeeding since the prior visit. If we view the data longitudinally, classifying somebody irreversibly as a non-exclusive breastfeeder from the first time that any non-breast milk item is given, then 84% of those women still breastfeeding were breastfeeding exclusively at 4 months. These results are very encouraging because they indicate that with a modest intervention, a high uptake of exclusive breastfeeding can be achieved. Now, I spend a lot of my time telling people what to do, and they don't always do what I say, and I don't think me telling people to exclusively breastfeed was the reason why we had such a good uptake. I think the primary reason was the well-trained and motivated nurse counselors who implemented the counseling program, but I think we also need to give credit to a supportive health service environment where consistent messages were given across the health services, and also to the active support of the message around exclusive breastfeeding by the mother support group. The message about exclusive breastfeeding was one that was enthusiastically embraced by the participants and healthcare workers in the community, and songs and poems and drama presentations were made about exclusive breastfeeding. When we compare those women who had breastfed exclusively to 4 months to those women who had not, we found significant reductions in the risk of postnatal HIV transmission with exclusive breastfeeding. Excluding those with a positive PCR result by 5 weeks of age, we found that HIV transmission occurred in 4% of those who were exclusively breastfed by 4 months and in 10% of those who were non-exclusive breastfeeders. If we treat non-exclusive breastfeeding as a time-dependent variable, we found a more than threefold increased risk of postnatal transmission that was attributable to non-exclusive breastfeeding. There were some differences between the women who breastfed exclusively compared to those who did not. Those women who did not exclusively breastfeed were a little younger, and they were more likely to be primiparous. They were more likely to have a full-time job, and they had slightly better socioeconomic conditions, including having access to water on their own property and having a fridge at home. There were no significant differences in feeding practices by the child's birth weight, by maternal CD4 count, by maternal viral load, body mass index, hemoglobin, and clinical symptoms. If we adjust statistically for all the other risk factors that in our data are associated with postnatal transmission, we observed a slight attenuation of the association, but it remained statistically significant, indicating a greater than twofold increase in HIV transmission associated with non-exclusive breastfeeding. We also observed no association between exclusive breastfeeding and intrapartum and intrauterine transmission, and that which we would have expected had the association been due to reverse causality. Finally, we examined the risk of non-exclusive breastfeeding at later ages. Now, for this analysis, we confined ourselves to the control group who continued to breastfeed for a median of 16 months. Here, we calculated the actuarial hazard rates of acquiring HIV per 1 month of breastfeeding, conditional on still continuing to breastfeed. In the first 4 months, non-exclusive breastfeeding had a considerably higher monthly hazard rate than exclusive breastfeeding. But after 4 months, when all participants had now introduced complementary foods while they continued to breastfeed, transmission hazards were more similar to exclusive breastfeeding at earlier ages and were lower than non-exclusive breastfeeding at the earlier ages. We conclude from these data that non-exclusive breastfeeding, when it is developmentally appropriate at older ages, is probably not associated with increased risk of HIV transmission, possibly due to maturation of the child. In conclusion, our data demonstrate that exclusive breastfeeding is feasible if it is supported by an informed and skilled counseling intervention. Our data also demonstrate, consistent now with at least 3 other large studies, that exclusive breastfeeding is associated with a more than 50% reduction in HIV transmission. We hypothesize that non-exclusive breastfeeding may disrupt physiological processes related to suckling and efficient milk removal. This, in turn, is likely to lead to increased infectivity of breast milk and mastitis. It is therefore important that exclusive breastfeeding be promoted within the context of a comprehensive lactation management and support program. There should now be no excuse not to move rapidly to implement programs to support exclusive breastfeeding. Exclusive breastfeeding is an effective means of reducing HIV transmission and protecting the health of children of both HIV-infected and uninfected mothers. And I'd like to thank NICHD for their support of the study. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Liz. Lovely study. Are there questions from the audience?
Louise Denverman from Vanderbilt. Your hazards ratio in 12 to 24 months looked like it was about a 0.5. Was that statistically significant? And if it was, is there some catch-up of the protected children later in life and the rates are paradoxically a little higher? Previous slide, if they want to go back 2 slides.
Well, the hazard rates at the older ages were slightly lower than was seen at the younger ages, so there was a declining hazard as the child got older. And the period post 12 months is in fact significantly lower than the period before 12 months.
But it was significantly lower in the group of non-exclusively breastfed, suggesting sort of a catch-up in the exclusively breastfed. Would that be a fair interpretation?
No. After 4 months of age, everybody is a non-exclusive breastfeeder.
I understand.
So it's because at that point, complementary food is required by the child.
If I understood those green bars, and it was a hazards ratio between the control group.
Yes.
What was the hazards ratio referring to then? The hazard ratio of getting HIV at that time period.
It's a hazard rate per month within that time interval.
All right, I get it. Thanks.
Questions. What is the antiretroviral regimens used, if any? Number two, being, do you have the prevalence data after 4 months? Until what time the mothers are breastfeeding? Did they stop at 4 months? If so, do you have the HIV transmission data after 4 months?
Okay. Just to take a first question, all women in the study got single-dose nevirapine, which is what was recommended at the time. Antiretroviral treatment became available towards the end of the study, but at that point, essentially, all women had already been enrolled. So this is essentially an untreated cohort for the most part. We do have the data post 4 months. The data that I presented here for the late postnatal transmission rates, those pertain to the control group where the median duration of breastfeeding was 16 months. In the intervention group, not everybody stopped breastfeeding as they were supposed to. And when we look at HIV-free survival in the two groups, there's no significant difference between the intervention and control group.
Ed? How is the data of exclusive breastfeeding collected? If it was collected by study staff, I would imagine it would be difficult for a woman who is being given by the clinic staff messages, you should exclusively breastfeed, you should exclusively breastfeed, to acknowledge that she's not. Was that taken into consideration?
Yeah. When we put the study in place, we put a lot of effort into designing our instruments to collect information about breastfeeding practices. And we actually had four different ways that we were collecting practices. One was a very structured questionnaire, which we've used for most of our analyses, and that was administered by study staff independent of the individuals doing the actual one-to-one counseling. We also had a home diary that women kept. We also kept a structured way of the counselor's opinion about whether they thought somebody was an exclusive breastfeeder or not. And we also had an observational schedule that was used on home visits.
There's a lady at the back.
Yeah, Elena Ovieta from Argentina. I was wondering if fear of stigma and disclosure in the family had something to do with the decision of choosing or not exclusive breastfeeding. Thank you.
Well, in our particular community, we were fortunate that exclusive breastfeeding was promoted as the norm. And so if people, being an exclusive breastfeeding was something, I think part of the reason it was such a message that was so enthusiastically embraced by participants was that it was one that did not distinguish HIV positive from HIV negative women.
Someone.
John Ziegler, Sydney. Thanks very much, very nice. It seems to suggest that exclusive breastfeeding is more potent than antiretrovirals might be. The transmission rate that you had at 4 months of 4% in the exclusive breastfeeding group sounds actually lower than we've seen in previous formula feeding studies. I guess it's hard to compare one study with another, but can you comment on that?
Yeah, I think it's very difficult to compare across studies given the enormous power of markers of the severity of HIV disease in predicting postnatal transmission. I think, however, the point you make about the 50% reduction having a lot of public health importance, I'd like to just emphasize that point because it is a behavioral intervention. We might want to minimize its importance, but it's a substantial reduction. But I would say, you know, 4% is not 0%, and I think it is important that we look at how to combine promotion of exclusive breastfeeding with the use of antiretrovirals to lower that transmission rate down further than 4%.
Thanks. There's one last question, if you don't mind keeping it brief. Yeah.
Dunstan Bagenda, Uganda. I wanted to ask as a follow-up to an earlier question, the post 4 month hazards. We know that most of the transmission is occurring early. There are very few events after. So do you have confidence intervals? You show those green hazards. I think that are they statistically significant?
In our data, it looked like the hazards declined and got lower as the child got older. Statistically significantly.
Okay.
Thanks very much, Louise, for fine people.
Is Sakon Ponprasad from Chiang Mai Faculty of Medical Science. Is going to be presenting on anti-inflammatory cytokine profile in term placenta of HIV-infected women.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. And first of all, I would like to thank the organizer to give me the opportunity to present my work. And I'm, in behalf of my co-worker, would like to present you our research entitled of anti-inflammatory cytokine profile in term placenta of HIV-infected women receive antiretroviral for prevention of mother-to-child transmission of HIV in Thailand. It gives you just a brief introduction. As we have known, the HIV mother-to-child transmission can occur before, during, before delivery that we call in utero transmission, and during the delivery that we call intrapartum, and after delivery that by breastfeeding. In fact, we know that the placenta play an important role as a natural barrier for prevention of HIV mother-to-child transmission, since in absence of antiretroviral prophylaxis, 90% of infants born from HIV-infected mother are protected against in utero HIV transmissions. Moreover, we know that the placental cytokine chemokine barons are involved in both pregnancy and HIV transmissions. As you can see, the increase of the anti-inflammatory cytokine can activate the HIV transmission, and also it can induce the abortions. In the other hand, the anti-inflammatory cytokines such as IL-10, it can a protection of HIV mother-to-child transmission, and it also maintains the pregnancy. The effect of antiretroviral prophylaxis on placental cytokine environment is still unclear. Thus, the objective of this study is to assess whether cytarabine or nevirapine used for prevention of mother-to-child transmission of HIV-1 modify the placental cytokine chemokine barons. This is the part of the multi-center ANRS 1267 study in France, Cameroon, and Thailand that HIV infected women receive the different ARV prophylaxis for prevention of HIV mother-to-child transmissions. The sub-study in Thailand, we have enrolled 88 HIV-infected pregnant women, and all of them received the cytarabine from 28 weeks of gestational age, with and without nevirapine, at the onset level. Among the group of HIV-infected women, we have 27 women had a cesarean section, and 89% of them received cetirizine only. And 61 of HIV-infected women had the vaginal delivery. 82% of them received cetirizine plus nevirapine. And also, we allow the HIV-uninfected women as the control group. And all of HIV-uninfected women had the vaginal delivery. After delivery, the placenta was sent to the laboratory, and then the placenta villi were immediately prepared. 3 grams of placenta villi were cultured in the culture medium and incubated for 24 hours. Then the secretion of cytokine, chemokine, that secrete in the culture supernatant were assayed by ELISA. In the same placenta, the placenta villi were preserved in RNA preservative agent, and then the mRNA were extracted. The cytokine mRNA were analyzed by the real-time PCR. And also the level of cytokine were standardized against the reference placenta. For the statistical analysis, the cytokine chemokine median level were analyzed according to maternal HIV status, mode of delivery, antiretroviral regimen, and the duration of cetirizine prophylaxis. As I have told you before, in the group of HIV-infected women, we have women with cesarean section and with vaginal delivery. That's for the stat and for the HIV uninfected woman, we have only the woman with vaginal delivery. That's for the statistical analysis. We first analyze, compare the result of HIV infected woman with cesarean section versus HIV vaginal delivery. And if the results are not different, and then we combine the results of both groups together and then compare to those of HIV uninfected women. And if the results of both groups are different, and then we compare only the results of HIV-infected women with vaginal delivery versus HIV-uninfected women. As you can see in the table, just only the secretion of IL-15, that's higher, significantly higher in HIV-infected women with vaginal delivery. However, it was not significantly when compared to those of HIV-uninfected women. And for another type of cytokine, after we combine the secretion level of each cytokine between HIV-infected women with cesarean and vaginal delivery together, and compared to those of HIV-uninfected women, no significantly difference was observed. The median level of SDF1 gene F-alpha mRNA was significantly lower in HIV-infected women with vaginal delivery. However, it was not significantly different when compared to those of HIV-uninfected women. Since the median level of IL-8 and IL-10 mRNA was not significantly different between HIV-infected women with cesarean section and vaginal delivery. And then we combine the result together and compare to those of HIV-uninfected women. And no significantly different was observed. Interestingly, among the group of HIV-infected women, we found that the women who received cetirizine plus nevirapine had 2 times lower level of TNF-alpha when compared to those of HIV-infected women who received cetirizine only. The proportion of IL-10 at detectable level between the women who received cetirizine plus nevirapine was not significantly different when compared to women who received cetirizine only. As we know that the single dose of nevirapine is completely absorbed within 5 hours. Thus, we analyze the cytokine expression according to this time point, and we found that the woman who received nevirapine less than 5 hours before delivery had a higher proportion of IL-10 at detectable level than those in women who received nevirapine longer than 5 hours before delivery. And also, the median duration of ACT prophylaxis in our study is 63 days. Thus, we analyze the cytokine expression level according to this duration time point. We found that the HIV-infected woman who received cytarabine prophylaxis longer than 63 days has 2 times lower level of TNF-alpha than those in HIV-infected women who received cytarabine less than 63 days. Moreover, the higher proportion of IL-10 at detectable level also was observed in the group of HIV-infected women who received cytarabine prophylaxis longer than 63 days. The increase of IL-10 in women who received nevirapine less than 5 hours before delivery and received cytarabine prophylaxis longer than 63 days was independent of the mode of delivery, while the decrease of TNF alpha mRNA could not only be attributed to the antiviral provided. In conclusion, in the placenta compartment of HIV-infected women, the cytarabine and nevirapine prophylaxis can inhibit the HIV replication, and that can protection of HIV mother-to-child transmission. In additional mechanisms, cytarabine and or nevirapine can decrease the expression of TNF-alpha mRNA, TNF-alpha pro-inflammatory cytokine, and increase the expression of IL-10, the anti-inflammatory cytokine. By changing this cytokine balance, it might be inhibit the HIV replication, and thus can protect against the infection of placenta by HIV. That can decrease the risk of HIV in utero transmissions. Finally, I would like to thank all women who have participated in this study. I also would like to thank all sponsorship that I have named here and my collaborator in France. Thank you for your attention.
So we'll take a few questions.
Hi. Did you look at the viral loads and association with viral loads and cytokine markers?
Of course, we take the viral load, the maternal viral load,
yes.
Right? Yes, of course, we take the maternal viral load. And it was not correlated with the cytokine expression level. And also, not related with the transmission.
Stenberman, Vanderbilt University. Bacterial vaginosis is pretty strongly associated with HIV infection. It is therefore possible that the associations you're seeing are actually associated with bacterial vaginosis, not HIV per se. Were you able to control for bacterial vaginosis since you've got the placentas? It'd be pretty easy to read white cells and determine subclinical bacterial vaginosis, even if there wasn't clinical bacterial vaginosis. Did you do that? And if you didn't do that, could you do that?
Sorry, Kevin.
Could you correlate bacterial vaginosis with your findings about those cytokines and bacterial vaginosis?
We didn't do that for the bacterial
vaginosis.
And yes, we are also have excluded the women that they are have the bacterial vaginosis. We not enroll this kind of women.
Well, I'm just cautioning you that most women with bacterial vaginosis will be subclinical. So you'd have to look at the, you know, you may be able to look at the higher tract infection rate, the subclinical chorioamnionitis as a marker of bacterial vaginosis since you've actually got the placentas. I'm just worried that your findings might be confounded and you're making assumptions about HIV associations with your cytokine profiles when in fact bacterial vaginosis may be contributing to them. So it's just...
So we have to, we just concentrate on the, we pay attention for the in utero transmissions, not the intrapartum transmissions. That's why we try to rule out the vaginal bacterial vaginosis. We don't want to include this woman in our study.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next presenter is Oriel Cole from Hospital Clinic Maternal Fetal Medicine, Barcelona, Spain. And he's going to be presenting on maternal and fetal safety of developing containing heart regimens in pregnancy.
Good afternoon. I first like to thank my co-authors from the three different hospitals, especially Montserrat Lonca, Ima Ocaña, and Ana Aguilar from their contribution. It's a multi-center study, as you will see. All this question comes from the time when the U.S. FDA and other institutions warned us about the use of nevirapine, especially among patients who were not immunosuppressed. And that warning was especially important among women, and we were all, most of us were treating at that time pregnant women with nevirapine. Then to more studies, in 2004-2005, this from the clinical trial from the U.S., where that showed that patients under nevirapine had a very high rate of severe toxicities, especially hepatic and cutaneous. And all these women that saw that there were over 250 cell counts, and the study was suspended for this reason. In a retrospective study published a year later, also they reported 3 of 23 adverse events, which is a lower incidence. And all the women had initiated nevirapine in the third trimester, and all of them were with high CD4 cell counts, which that information was consistent. But anyhow, in our personal experience, we did not feel that these figures were real, that 29% and 13% were the real figures, and there was maybe overreported. The objective of our study was to establish maternal and fetal safety of nevirapine-containing heart regimens during pregnancy, and the method was, as I said, a retrospective, multi-center study from three prospective cohorts of two universities in Barcelona, including Hospital Clínic Vall d'Hebron and Hospital del Mar. The inclusion criteria were all women who had received heart at least 2 weeks during pregnancy, delivered after 22 weeks, and the study period was a 7.5-year period, and toxic events were defined using the standard criteria of that all the other studies has published, and we did include skin rash, hepatotoxicity, grade 1 to 4, and the adverse perinatal outcome, although here it's only a little part of the study, were preterm delivery, small for gestational age, preeclampsia, and intrauterine fetal demise. We did univariate and multivariate analysis, and this study is sponsored by Boehringer Ingelheim. The study included 311 women under heart, as I said, and of them, 61% were under nevirapine-containing regimens, and the rest, near 40%, in non-nevirapine-containing regimens were with protease inhibitors. Of the women with nevirapine-containing regimens, the 40% had been under nevirapine prior to conception, and the rest 112, the amvaripine was introduced during pregnancy. Sociodemographic characteristics of both groups, as you can see, they're pretty much similar, although they were, since most of the in the initial treatment, women were on nalfenavir and other protease inhibitors, and later on they were more on nevirapine. They were not totally similar, and there were more white women in the non-nevirapine containing regimens, and more smoking and more other drugs used. Regarding HIV-related variables, they were fairly similar as well, and the mean time from HIV diagnosis to delivery was about 7 years. And about 40%, as I said, were naive patients at the time of conception. The results of this study, the main results, is we saw 9 toxic liver events and 10 skin rashes for about 3% of each. There were 19 toxic events in 17 patients, which is a 5.5%. When we separated between nevirapine-containing regimens and non-nevirapine-containing regimens, all events occurred in the nevirapine-containing regimens with an overall toxic event of 8.9%, and differences were statistically significant. When we looked at the severity of the hepatotoxic events, we saw that only 4 were acute toxic hepatitis with grade 3, 4, or jaundice, or liver failure or any major event, and 4 were severe rashes with a 1 Lyell syndrome, and 2 this patient had also two of the patients had severe rashes had hepatotoxic events as well. There were no cases of fulminant hepatitis or maternal death, and when we combine these 4 plus 4, which and 2 were the same, we have acute toxic hepatitis and or severe rash in 6 patients, which is 3.1% of the patients under nevirapine during pregnancy. The interval between initiation of nevirapine and toxic event median and range was 4 weeks, and they all happened between 1 and 12 weeks. And only 1 patient had been under nevirapine prior to conception and had the liver augmentation at the beginning of pregnancy, and the rest happened during pregnancy. Interestingly, when we compared regarding their CD4 cell counts, we did not see the difference that is observed in general, and we had even a higher percentage of patients with toxic events on the low CD4 counts, although differences were not statistically significant. When we compared regarding month of initiation of therapy in the study from the American Journal, we had obstetric and gynecology, we saw that most of the women developed toxic events in late pregnancy. That was not our case. We had similar percentages in either trimester and even more in the first and second trimester than in the third trimester. When we went down to adverse perinatal outcome, we did not see any differences in premature delivery, small for gestational age, preeclampsia, or intrauterine fetal demise, or overall adverse outcome. They were similar, although we did observe a trend towards better outcome in the nevirapine-containing regimens. Vertical transmission was only observed in 1.3% of all cases. When we combine all toxic events, as I said, it was 8.9% in treated patients with nevirapine, and the adverse perinatal outcome was observed in 30.9% of the nevirapine-containing regimens and 48.8% in the non-nevirapine-containing regimens. And that difference, as I said, was not statistically significant. And when we adjusted for parity, ethnicity, and smoking and drug consumption, these differences were even smaller, and therefore they were not statistically significant. Therefore, I may conclude that all toxic events occurred in women in nevirapine-containing regimens, but the incidence was similar than the one described in non-pregnant women, not higher, as was previously mentioned in other smaller studies. Almost all cases occurred in newly treated patients, except one that was at the beginning of pregnancy. The occurrence of toxicity was not associated to immunological status of trimester of initiation of therapy. A non-significant lower incidence of adverse perinatal outcome among these women was observed. And we conclude that in time where efavirenz is not a safe drug to be used, especially in preconceptional counseling, the use of nevirapine-containing regimens during pregnancy may be justified in selected cases. Thank you very much.
So we have time to take some questions. I think we've saved some time during the presentations.
I think the study is quite different from the previous, which said that CD4 cell count does make a difference, increase the likelihood of nevirapine toxicity. And we know that you divided the group into less than 250 and above 250. Was it possible for you to look at a different cutoff, like maybe less than 200 and above 200, and did you do any kind of analysis? Maybe the cutoff is different in Spain. I'm just thinking aloud here.
We could not cut down too much because we only had 20% of the patients that were below 250 CD4 cell counts. Nevertheless, the trend was a higher incidence in among women with low CD4 counts. That's the only information I can give you. Therefore, our population is different than the one from the other studies. It's not a very sick population and well-treated and well follow up of treatment, so that could account for some of the differences.
I think if there are questions touching on even the earlier presentations, we have our time. We can take one or two, if there are any. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yes, I had a question for Dr. Cook from the previous session. I was wondering if she could speak a little bit more about the community mobilization and education part of the program in Zambia, and to tell us about the amount of, or how you managed that, the integration of the community and the clinic-based parts of the intervention.
It's an interesting issue because the community promotion of exclusive breastfeeding is something that kind of developed organically and wasn't something that we had planned at the beginning of the study. We had thought of it more as an individualized counseling intervention. What we did think was important was that other healthcare workers in the clinic should be given the same message. And so we made sure to have orientation sessions with the nurses in pediatric outpatients, in the labor ward, in other situations in the clinics where there would be interaction with mothers with young children. So we made sure that the health services was providing a consistent message around exclusive breastfeeding. With the community outreach activity, it was more something that developed organically. And because this was a message that didn't discriminate on the basis of HIV status, it was a kind of a unifying message that could be used as part of recruitment to get people into the study, to educate people about voluntary counseling and testing for HIV, the PMTCT program in general. And it just kind of organically developed as part of the some of the education that we were doing around HIV in recruiting women into the study, not something specifically that we designed around exclusive breastfeeding. The mother support groups were an interesting development, which also developed somewhat organically. And these were study participants who organized themselves into support groups. And the support groups were primarily concerned with various income-generating activities, but the message around exclusive breastfeeding was something that they were very excited about and mobilized them and brought them together with a unifying theme.
Can I just ask a follow-up? Do you consider in retrospect that community component was essential to the success of your overall program, or was it really a sort of a side issue?
I think having a consistent and supportive health service where there was not different messages being given by other healthcare workers was certainly beneficial. I'm not sure about the community side of that, whether that was necessary or not.
My name is Ralph Kessner from Germany, and I was thank you very much for these presentations of breastfeeding and mother-to-child transmission, and I wonder, these were conducted in Africa, but what could we take to Europe or the Western world if a mother in our country would ask, how can I breastfeed my child? What would you answer her?
Who are you asking?
Anybody.
Yeah, I think if I may give a crack to that question, generally the guidelines are replacement feeding if it is affordable, feasible, acceptable, sustainable. So I guess in the Western world where you come from, you are likely to meet the AFAS criteria as given by WHO. So you probably would rely more on replacement feeding because you are likely to meet the condition as opposed to the developing countries where that would be a challenge. That is my perception.
And the Western speakers? Thank you.
Western speakers.
Well, even with 1% risk of transmission of HIV to a baby, I don't think that a gynecologist would dare recommending breastfeeding under triple therapy to a woman in Europe, given that the mortality under formula feeding is very low in developed countries. But yeah, the question will be asked now.
Can I come up with my question?
Oh, it is.
Yeah, please go ahead.
I'm trying to link Dr. Kohl's presentation with the presentation from the Garrett. And my first question is to Dr. Kohl, your population, was it an African population or was it... If I saw well, the hospitals
you were
in Spain,
the great majority was ethnic local. About 85-90% of the patients were born, Spanish-born and white.
Right. If I recall well, the literature wasn't there in the Caucasian population a higher risk of hepatotoxicity related to development?
Yes, I can recall so.
Then I link that to the current because if I... So well in the Mitra Plus study, is it? You have 300-something patients, Vic, and wouldn't it be possible, because you said that there was nearly no or three only patients or mothers who had developed hepatotoxicity, then wouldn't it be possible to try to link the two studies and try to come up with some recommendations on either or not applying developing for within the half region.
So if I didn't understand well, you mean, can I put my study into recommendations and...
No. Perhaps the Mitra Plus study, is it the Mitra Plus?
Yeah. The Mitra Plus, yes.
I believe he was looking to retrospective studies where they had used nevirapine before. But I think he showed a few cases where there was nevirapine toxicity. And he said, if I understood him very well, the cutoff points probably did not matter so much in his studies. But in our study, definitely we had skin rash, which was a reaction from the nevirapine, but we never saw any of the liver toxicity as being reported, and this is what I showed here. Now, I don't know whether you can say the two studies can be joined. Of course, he worked on the Caucasians, most of the, but I'm sure there are a few foreigners, most likely. But ours was purely African setup kind of studies. So I don't know whether we can merge the two and say... still, I would take caution, really, for nevirapine, because if you're not careful, if you're not following up very carefully the women, you may end up with some problems. particularly when you have this severe level 3 and level 4 toxicity. They are quite nasty, as we saw them in the clinic. And they need immediate attention, otherwise you may end up with a trap. And when women get this kind of reaction, they may not be very compliant with the treatment. They'll abandon it completely, which is sort of a reaction out of women.
Yeah, it was just to try to balance the benefits and the risks, for sure. I mean, knowing also that the nivolumab regimen is much, much cheaper than the other type of regimen, and certainly than nivolumab, for example.
Yeah, it's true.
We have probably to put that in the balance. Certainly in an African
community. Yeah, I think this debate can go on. Let's give a chance to somebody who's been standing for some time. Yeah, go on.
Okay, thank you. We've had a comment that 1% transmission rate, which could be attributable to breastfeeding in babies in Germany or Australia, would not be acceptable. But we still have this happening despite the very interesting results that we've heard today. So the question really relates to that additional burden of transmission that is occurring during breastfeeding, and whether there are other things we can do. If these were adults being exposed, we would be giving them antiretrovirals post-exposure, but we're not doing that for the babies. Do either of the presenters the first two papers think there may be additional benefit in giving babies antiretrovirals while they're being breastfed?
Giving babies antiretrovirals whilst they're being breastfed. What do you think is it?
Yeah, we have data, the so-called Mitra study, where we give babies drugs during the breastfeeding instead of the mothers. And the transmission was similar. The results are similar, like in the Mitra plus one mother.
Would there be an additive effect?
Would it?
Would there be an additive effect if you gave treating both the mothers and the babies?
Would it be better?
Yeah, I think if you give the mothers. Well, when we plan these studies, actually there are different phases of access to antiretroviral treatment at that time, and. Of course, with mothers, there's more compliance, there's more motivation of taking them rather than the babies, and they think that one is not taking care of the mothers and so forth. But definitely why we have such problems, probably we can opt to give the mother the baby instead of the mother. That's what I can say. But we achieve almost the similar results from that.
There are also data from the Simba study about, and they have also very low rates of transmission when giving prophylaxis to the babies. So I think there's still a place for prophylaxis in the babies also, and maybe the two options should be compared or combined.
You want to ask?
Yeah, I think I can ask the last question, our colleague from Rwanda. I think one opportunity that we have in the PMTCT program is to identify exposed children and those who are infected to get them into treatment early. And that is one big challenge we are still facing in the developing countries. And I was just wondering, the 7 children that were identified as HIV infected, have any of them progressed to requiring treatment, or what is their stage as far as the evaluation is concerned?
3 of them are under treatment at present time, 3 out of 7.
Well, I just want to thank you for being present here and to thank all the speakers. You would have gathered from the small number of presentations, which are all very good, that we learned something about the pathogenesis of transmission intrauterine and some reassuring words on nivolumab toxicity. And we have papers which indicate that there are at least 2 methods which might be useful in reducing breastfeeding transmission. One is to change behavior towards exclusive breastfeeding, and the second is the use of heart treatment.
And these two papers that you've heard from Rwanda and from Tanzania will be added to by a number of other papers because similar studies are underway. Thank you very much for listening.